You're a funny guy. Come on, give me a laugh.
You are funny, dude.
Hit that S again.
Are they the coolest show in the Bay Area?
And no white boys. They cool.
That's what people are saying.
You guys are phenomenal.
This is one of the most perfect ways that I could end my day, getting the chance to talk to Mr. Mark and Dan, you know?
We'll let you be the judge.
Oh.
All I know is it's a couple of Bay Area boys talking sports.
I know nothing.
Thanks.
It's Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Happy Friday. Welcome in, Willard and Dibs. No Willard, though. It's Dibs and Grandy with you here on 95.7 The Game. Dibs, we got Giants back at home. Mets are in town, as we were just talking about a little bit ago. We've got a really rough injury for the Valkyries. Their only all-star is out for the rest of the season. Bad news there for the Golden State Valkyries. We also have what seems to me, Dibs, we've also got training camp going on for the Niners still. We also have what I feel like, for the first time in weeks, we have what feels like a real update in the Jonathan Kuminga saga as it continues, yeah. Or the conundrum, as we've been calling it here recently on this show.
Nothing breaking, but a little bit of a hint and a little bit more smoke, a little bit more possible conjecture. And I don't think it brings us closer to a solution, but it does add a little bit of spice to the stew.
And I think it has the Warriors, the decision makers in the Warriors front office, Dibs, I think it has them feeling a little bit nervous about this whole thing for the first time in a while. I don't know how you react to everything new that we've learned, and let's just get you through a bunch of what went down recently. And what went down recently is just some people in the know talking about things. First of all, Shams Charania yesterday on ESPN says a couple of things. First of all, that Kuminga's not in a rush to sign anywhere, that he doesn't like the Warriors' offers, and that the Warriors don't like the trade offers they've gotten for Kuminga elsewhere. He says those two teams that have made offers to the Warriors for Kuminga are the Suns and the Kings. Anthony Slater was on ESPN and NBA Today yesterday as well and said there is mutual interest between the Warriors and Horford, Melton, and Seth Curry, but then also talked about Jonathan Kuminga and said something along the lines of, Dibs, the Warriors have Kuminga in their plans, but Kuminga doesn't have the Warriors in his plans. The translation there essentially is, feels like the Warriors might now want Kuminga back potentially more than they did before, but Kuminga doesn't really have interest in coming back. Now, Anthony Slater also wrote on ESPN, and this was released yesterday afternoon, Dibs, he said that general manager Mike Dunleavy and the Warriors front office showed extra level of motivation this week in conversations with Kuminga's agent, delivering what they believe is a fair offer to bring Kuminga back, quote, but Kuminga hasn't found anything they presented appealing. And even further, Dibs, Anthony Slater writes, Steve Kerr has been one of the leading voices trying to patch things together, but Kuminga no longer wants to be a secondary option or a fallback plan, fearing a minimization in important moments. All of that taken together, Dibs, and I feel like we're getting to a point where after there was 4 weeks of very little movement and very little smoke, and it seemed like we were miles away from a solution, a resolution, an end to this entire saga, I feel with what I have gathered and what I'm hearing people say, Dibs, the Warriors are finally getting to a point where they feel like they might lose this Jonathan Kuminga situation one way or another.
They don't have to worry about losing it because they control it. They either can sign and trade him, or they can not sign him long term and they can put the ball in his court and say, well, we're far apart on a deal and you clearly don't want to be here and we don't want to, you know, trade you for pennies on the dollar, so you go ahead and play for 7.9 or don't.
But that's not a win for the Warriors.
It's not a win, but they still have the control over the decision making. I don't think that this news today, these comments today, they don't put Kuminga in the driver's seat. They put the Warriors in an uncomfortable spot, and maybe it moves them to accept a deal that they wouldn't have otherwise accepted, but they're still in the driver's seat. There's no other team out there that is going to give them an offer sheet, or they haven't so far in the almost 4 weeks that we've been doing this. There's been no offer sheet given. If an offer sheet is given, the Warriors have 2 days to match or he's gone, and that hasn't happened. So, yes, this is uncomfortable, but this is all part of the process that the Warriors are going through, and I don't think that any of those comments, and I believe them to be true, I don't think any of that puts the Warriors in a spot where they're now on the defensive.
I think that mindset has shifted within the Warriors front office over the last couple of days. I really do feel that way. And you can let us know how you feel. 888-957-9570. The way I view this entire situation, Dibs, is the Warriors, I think for a while, Warriors decision makers, right? And that group includes Steve Kerr. It includes the GM, Mike Dunleavy. It includes the various Lacobs, including Joe and his sons. It includes a lot of these guys and others that I'm not naming. I think for the most part, you have a split decision from those guys on the efficacy of Jonathan Kuminga on the Warriors. Some of those people in that group want Kuminga to stay a Warrior and believe in his potential to help this team now and in the future. And I think generally that group is led by Joe Lacob, the owner, the primary owner. And I think the other group is like, I don't think it's going to work here. And irregardless of how they think of Kuminga as a player, I think that group just feels it's not going to work with this team, and we're running out of time to try to win, so it would be better off trading Kuminga away, getting whatever we can back, and going on from there. I think that group tends to be led by Steve Kerr, and I think it's pretty obvious based on how Kerr has handled his minutes throughout his 4 years with the Warriors. So I felt like, in general, the side that was pro-Kuminga with the Warriors generally said, all right, you know what? Let's put him out there on the market. Let's see what we can get back, what we can get back for him. And if it's something that we think is of value, then sure, let's do it. If it helps us win now, let's do it. But what has happened, Dibs, over this month? No value has presented itself. Their best offer is potentially Dario Saric, Devin Carter, and 2 second-round picks for Jonathan Kuminga from the Suns. And now, again, 4 weeks in, we have Anthony Slater report this, that Mike Dunleavy and the Warriors, quote, had an extra level of motivation and delivered a fair offer to Kuminga. Kerr was one of the leading voices trying to patch things together, but Kuminga, quote, hasn't found anything they presented appealing. I think the conversation went something like this. Once the market was tested, and they found that there was nothing really appealing being offered to them in a Kuminga sign-in trade, that group that was the pro-Kuminga group probably approached the trade Kuminga group led by Steve Kerr and said, all right, Steve, here are our options. Do you want Kuminga on this team, or would you rather have Devin Carter and Dario Saric? And at that point, Steve might have said, okay, I guess it's probably better to have Kuminga on this team because Dario Saric is already here and he did not work with us and Devin Carter is a project at best. So, okay, let's go back to the bargaining table. Let's bring Kuminga back. And they present Kuminga with a fair offer and Kuminga says, no, I don't want to play for you. It might not even matter what the money is. And now it feels like the Warriors are stuck between a rock and a hard place where they finally went back to the negotiating table. But at this point, it's too late. Kuminga has mentally already moved on.
It's never too late. And they have been between a rock and a hard place for a long time. And you're still sitting here in late July where you don't have to do anything with Kuminga, the basketball player, for about 2 months. So you may be between a rock and a hard place, but it doesn't mean that you're going to be forced into action just yet. If you've still got Al Horford, who is either going to retire or play for you, and he's okay, just chilling, and maybe you have that same handshake agreement with D'Anthony Melton and or Seth Curry and or GP2, whatever else you've done in free agency, it's sensible that you might have other things already in place and you're just waiting on Kuminga. So you don't have to necessarily call his bluff right now and say, okay, well, you know, because Kuminga has now made it clear he doesn't want to play for us. Now we have to move him for pennies on the dollar. I don't think that you're at that spot yet. I do agree with what you're talking about with a divide in belief of Jonathan Kuminga. I do think there are two different camps, but ultimately, the camp that likes Kuminga, they're the ones who are actually making the payments for Kuminga, so they probably have the trump card.
Yeah, but my point is, what if the money doesn't matter and Kuminga doesn't want to be here no matter what?
Okay.
Then what happens?
Well, either you're able to trade Kuminga and get something for him, or...
which is a whole lot of nothing. presently.
Okay, and if it's a whole lot of nothing and you don't want to do that and get Šarić and a guy who doesn't even play for Sacramento, then you might just say, all right, Kuminga, now we're going to call your bluff. Either you play for us for 7.9 or you don't play basketball for a year. What's your choice, JK? Because if you're not going to play him anyway, then what's the big deal if you actually don't have to pay him $8 million and he doesn't play basketball?
You lose the asset for nothing. That's eventually what it is. And that's why I feel like the Warriors are in a situation now where they believe, oh my God, we might have burned this bridge to the point where now we can get nothing for the asset, or at very least, very little for the asset. I think the way that this all has been presented, Dibs, suggests the Warriors are feeling different about it. I mean, Steve Kerr never is going to come out and publicly say, I don't want Kuminga on my team. But I mean, how else are we supposed to look at the way that Kuminga has been handled at times under Steve Kerr? It seems pretty obvious that as a basketball player, Steve Kerr is not a fan of Kuminga. As a basketball player,
not
at this
stage. Not
that
he's not a fan. I don't think that he is as big a fan of Kuminga as some of the Warrior fans are. He's played Kuminga. He's played Kuminga in many spots, and then you get toward the end of last year, and you need Kuminga to play a certain way, and Steve Kerr and company didn't think that he was doing that, and that's when you DNP'd him. I do believe if you can find a way to bring him back, he's a guy you need. He's young. He can play minutes. You have an old team. He can still fit with this team, and he can be a part of what you're trying to do next year. I don't believe that the team has given up on Kuminga, and I also don't believe that Kuminga has fully given up on the team. These are just reports, and you got to wonder where these reports are coming from. And so far this week, it feels like it's been an onslaught of the Kuminga camp making these comments. Saw him work out. The agent sent out an Instagram or a tweet or whatever it was where he put out his content. All this content is, to me, coming from the agent side of it. So
what about the half that says the Warriors showed an extra level of motivation in negotiations and Steve Kerr is the one driving the bus? That seems like it comes from the Warriors side of things.
Sure. And I mean, what did Tim Kawakami say to us yesterday? He still said what he's been saying for the past month, which is he firmly believes that Kuminga will still be a Golden State Warrior. So it's not just, you know, a completely one-sided tale of Kuminga wants out. And if the Warriors are trying more aggressively to work something out with Kuminga and he is still rebuffing that, that could be a temporary rebuff, because if the Warriors offer is not what he wants, I would imagine it's higher than the $7.9 million that is the qualifying offer. I would bet that if they're going back and doing hard negotiations, they're coming up from 7.9.
Of course.
So at some point, Kuminga's got to decide. If the sign and trade market is dry and the offer sheet market is dry and you have a choice of play for 7.9 or sign
for 1 year
or sign a 2 year deal for 38 or whatever the number would be. And you know, we can talk about that report of 16 execs putting the market between 17 and 25 and wherever his number would be with the Warriors, it's going to be at least double what the qualifying offer will be. So that might change his tune as far as whether or not he wants to play here.
I think the offer the Warriors put in front of him probably was already double, if not more than double, the qualifying offer. And he apparently, quote, hasn't found anything they presented appealing.
Okay.
So we'll find out where it goes from here.
And that's the end of July. So if you get to the end of August, then his tune may change. If he realizes that he doesn't have other options, and the Warriors have the right to just stop trying to pursue sign and trades, they could basically say, it's 2 years and 36 with a player option, take it or leave it. Or you play on the qualifying offer for 7.9. It's up to you, JK. They have that ability.
And then he might play on the qualifying offer and you lose your asset for nothing in a year.
Right, and that's the spot where you've put yourself by not doing this last offseason.
Oh, you're right.
I'm not saying that this is best case scenario. The best case scenario is already gone. The best case scenario would be you sign him for 30, 3-90, sign and trade, and you get $15 million in player back. That would be the best case scenario, but I don't think that that's out there.
No, it does not seem like it is. So I think as a result now, the Warriors are stuck with three options, three choices, and they're all bad. They didn't want to have to do any of these. when this situation began. But they might have to do one of these three. I'll lay those three out when we come back. Plus, we got some calls that we'll get to you. Hang out. We're coming to you when we come back. 888-957-9570. And we'll let you hear everything that Shams and Slater have said about this. You're not going to want to miss it. And tonight at 7, the Valkyries take on the Dallas Wings. You can hear the game right here on 95.7 The Game or on the Valkyries channel on the Odyssey app. Just download the app and search Valkyries, brought to you by the San Francisco Sheriff's Office. Your future begins here, and Willard and Dibs are sponsored by Honda of Vallejo. More next on 95.7 The Game.
Work at the baseline, throws the pass away, knocked away by DiVincenzo. Saved as he's going out of bounds to McDaniels. McDaniels to Edwards, back to McDaniels, baseline, working on Draymond. Shoots a tough fadeaway jump shot, no good. And Kuminga high in the air, pulls down a rebound. He didn't get a rebound in game four, but he healed to Draymond. Draymond to Kuminga, beautiful pass, and a two-hand slam as Kuminga kept running.
Well, got the rebound and ran the court and finished.
Here comes DiVincenzo off a Gobert screen. Gobert gets it back, shot in traffic, up and good. As Pajemski thought he got wiped out on the screen. Now he takes the inbounds pass, spins away from Edwards, feeds Payton. Payton won't fire, out to Santos, back to Draymond. Good ball movement, Warriors down by five. Right corner, Kuminga takes the jumper, knocked it down, has a thought for the crowd as well. Warriors down by five, Butler turns and faces. Conley goes right by him, throws to Santos. Right corner, step back three, short rebound. Looney on the deflection. Kuminga down the lane with a right hand slam. Oh my goodness, Jonathan Kuminga elevated on the cut. Has cut the lead back down to three.
Filthy.
Little elevation sensation for JK.
Cha-ching!
Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Those are some of Kuminga's greatest moments, highlights from the second-round series, Warriors and T-Wolves, when he played consistent minutes for the first time all postseason and played pretty darn well.
Yeah, yeah.
Dibs, welcome back. It's Willard and Dibs. Yeah. Dibs and Granny with you. Let me read.
0-4 in those games, but
0-4. You're right.
I mean, you know,
he played pretty
and I'm
good.
I'm looking at the plus minus, and he was a minus 28 over the four
You're
games.
You're burying the kid.
I mean, I'm not burying the kid, but just hearing that little montage, it was great. Tim Roy on fire, didn't get a rebound in game four. He snuck that one in there.
He did sneak that.
And I'm looking at it, 29 and a half minutes, didn't get a rebound in game four. And then the other one, Tommy Tolbert. He got a rebound, and he ran the floor. It's like when I talk to my toddler, like, you picked up your toys all by yourself. That's kind of what I heard from that tone. Like, he actually rebounded, and he ran the floor.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
I'm not sitting here telling you that Kuminga is the second coming of any all-star superstar. I'm not telling you that. I'm just telling you I think the... the mood has shifted in the 49ers front office. And
the Warriors front office.
Yeah, did I say 49ers?
You did. It's all right. You're doing great.
I'm in a training camp mode
Big
this
time,
week.
Big time, right?
I meant Warriors,
and
yes.
And you're going to the Giants tonight.
Going to the Giants tonight.
This is like the three-sport confluence here
and
in July.
And I'm wearing a Valkyrie shirt.
Exactly.
Kayla Thornton really sucks. She's out for the year with a knee injury. They're only all-star this year, so we'll see how they bounce back. Paige Becker's in town today. The Dallas Wings and the Golden State Valkyries do battle tonight from Shea Center as they kick off the second half of their season. We're going to get to the phones in a sec. 888-957-9570. Austin, I see you. Jan, I see you. Will, I see you. We'll get to all you guys, so just stay patient. Can I just read a portion of this Anthony Slater piece from ESPN to you, Dibs?
Yeah, please.
Okay. So here it is from Jonathan Kuminga. Quote, beyond the contract demands, Kuminga is in search of a more guaranteed, consistent starting role and featured opportunity, sources said. That's something the Kings and Suns have pitched. Kuminga would be a significant part of the Warriors' rotation to open next season, and they'd need his supplementary scoring on nights when Stephen Curry, 37, or Jimmy Butler, 35, rest. That's something Coach Steve Kerr has told Kuminga in recent weeks. Kerr has been one of the leading voices trying to patch things together, sources said. But Kuminga no longer wants to be a secondary option or a fallback plan, fearing a minimization in important moments. End quote. Okay, so in there, Dibs, we have Kuminga saying what's important to him is a consistent starting role and a featured opportunity. Then we have the nugget, which I think is a really, really important nugget, and what I'm basing my entire point around. It's Steve Kerr that's the one that's trying to solve this this headbutting between Kuminga and the Warriors front office. It's Steve Kerr that is trying to fix this. Steve Kerr, in Kuminga's mind, has probably been the reason for the frustration in the first part. And Steve Kerr, in trying to fix it, is telling Jonathan Kuminga that he'll be a significant part of the Warriors' rotation, quote, to open the season, and they'd need his supplementary scoring when Steph or Jimmy rest. So you have, on one hand, Kuminga, whether he's right or wrong in wanting this, that's to the wayside. It's what he wants. He wants a featured starting opportunity. And you have Steve trying to fix this and get Kuminga back, saying, we need you to score when Steph or Jimmy or both don't play. And the Warriors think that's going to somehow convince Kuminga to come back? It makes no sense, Dibs. Kuminga is wanting something, and the Warriors are refusing to give it to him. Well, I don't see how this is going to work out.
They're refusing to give it to him. Would you like them to give it to him? Would you like Jonathan Kuminga to be your featured scorer on this team with Steph and Jimmy? The way you're portraying it...
I'm not saying that.
Well, what you're saying is, to me, it is mostly nonsensical when it comes from the Kuminga camp, because what Kuminga wants is what a lot of people want, and I understand that. You want to be the featured guy. You want to start. You want to play 30 or 32 minutes a night. You want to have the ha-ha. You want to cook. You want to do all these things, and that's great, and you can have that in a situation that is maybe different than what we have right now, because teams out there don't have the money or have chosen not to spend the money that you would want spent on you to bring you in and have you be that guy. So the next possible way for that to happen for Jonathan Kuminga would be for the Warriors to sign and trade him. And I do believe they've tried their level best to strike up a deal. And apologies to Sacramento, but that offer is a flat-out joke as far as what compensation would be. A player that you've already had who you didn't play when he was here most of the time, an unproven guy who averaged a point a game and 2 second-round picks, that's not actual compensation. That's like going to somebody's garage sale and they're selling their speedboat and you offer them $5. It's like, I'm not selling the speedboat for $5. You give me $2,200, we can talk, but this is not a real offer. So
what Kuminga wants doesn't matter. It matters because he has to accept it. One way, he has to agree to it. It's the only way this gets resolved.
Or he plays on the qualifying
offer.
And the
Warriors get nothing for him.
Well, that's in a year. And already you've gotten to a spot, and this is where you can't throw good money after bad. I believe the Warriors have already kind of mucked this up to where they're in this spot. Could they have gotten something done last offseason for, I don't know, $25 million? Or was he so stubborn that whatever he wanted, you weren't even close to offering? We don't know if there was an offer. We don't know if there was, you know, a huge divide between the two sides. What we do know is he did not get a contract extension, nor did Quentin Grimes or Josh Giddey. And all those players are kind of in this same bucket where what they want, their teams aren't willing to give. So now what are you going to do, both sides? I agree with you. It's not good if he plays for the qualifying offer and you can't trade him because he has a virtual no-trade clause. He plays, he's unhappy, he's not used the way that you would want to use him, and then he leaves and you get nothing. That's not good. I'm not trying to portray this as that being a good result, but the alternative for me isn't much better, which is you take two players who aren't very good and 2 second-round picks. That's not going to help you this year.
I think the way that maybe I need to explain this, and maybe I'm not getting my point across, is I'm not commenting on Kuminga the player, on who he is, on how he might help the Warriors, on if it's a fit, on if I think they should bring him back, if they should pay him 20, 25, whatever it is. Should they overpay him for... That's not what I'm talking about. I'm just talking about the idea of asset management. And from an asset management standpoint, the Warriors have absolutely shot themselves in the foot to get to this point.
Because I agree with that.
Right now, Dibs, the Warriors are looking at, as I understand it, the Warriors are looking at three realistic options. Three realistic. And maybe these vary from most realistic to least realistic, and maybe one of them or two of them aren't that realistic, whatever. I think there's three realistic options. Option number one is you take the Kings or the Suns lowball offer. The one that you and I both laughed about on air. It's still laughable. in my opinion. The Warriors do not want to do it, but that is an option. And that lowball offer is Devin Carter, Dario Saric, and 2 second-round picks. Maybe it gets slightly amended, but it won't be anything larger than that. The Suns offer, you've kind of heard differing reports. Maybe it's Grayson Allen. There's been some Royce O'Neal, some Nick Richards. Nothing amazing, but a piece that could be a rotation player for you. But nothing crazy. That's option number one. You take one of those, as the Warriors think, a low-ball offer. Okay, that's option one. Option two, Kuminga accepts the $7.9 million qualifying offer. Okay, you have a relatively cheap asset for a year. Not the end of the world there. You get your full non-taxpayer mid-level, which you can use on Horford, you can use on Melton, you can use on X, Y, and Z, which would be helpful. But then, in a year from now, I guarantee you, you lose Kuminga for nothing. And from an asset management standpoint, that is a disaster. That's option number two. And then we come to option number three, Dibs, which maybe becomes the most troubling of all. The Warriors, in order to keep Kuminga and have him for multiple years, therefore being able to trade him at some point, they have to drastically overpay him in order to get him to accept the contract in the first place. Because I'm operating from a position, Dibs, where I don't think Kuminga wants to be back here under almost any circumstance. It might take a dramatic overpay from the Warriors in order to get it done. I think he's valuing the role and the situation that he goes to as potentially more valuable to him than the money. So in order for him to put that on the back burner, the Warriors are going to have to entice him with a whole lot more money than anybody else is.
Well, that's
those,
not, yeah.
I feel like, are the three options for
those
the Warriors.
Are the only three options.
And all of those feel like losses for the Warriors.
Depends on how you manage the asset in that third scenario. And if you do sign him for more than you're comfortable with, and let's just say it's $25 million, well, that takes you out of the non-taxpayer mid-level. And so you'd be settling for a couple of veteran minimum guys. So this upcoming year, you're not going to have the depth that you would otherwise. But just looking at your idea of asset management, if you signed him for $25 million, 3 years and 75, which feels like more than they'd be comfortable doing, and
absolutely,
maybe it's not as much as he would want either, but that $25 million becomes a tradable salary slot at the deadline. And so from your scenario of asset management, that would be the best way to manage the asset. You would have a $25 million salary slot that you could then replace with a player on the market who you actually like more than Kuminga. The first scenario would be the worst asset management, although I guess losing him for nothing would be worse than getting two players that you don't actually want. Devin Carter actually averaged 3.8 points a game last year.
Put some respect on his name,
dude. And Dario Saric is a guy you couldn't wait to get rid of. So for me, the best case scenario would be find a way to have him come back at a reasonable number and then find a way to trade him at the deadline. But that's risky for you because he might not fit. And if you do sign him for 25, you can't probably bring in much else in the free agency period. So
25 puts you over the first apron, and you would be about 11 mil away from the second apron.
Which you can't get to the second apron because then you're hard capped, and I think you're hard capped in the first apron too as far as aggregating salaries and trades.
Yeah, now you would be hard capped at the second apron once you use your taxpayer mid-level, and I would imagine they're going to use that on Al Horford, it seems. You're going to use that one way or another because
right,
you don't have
right.
any other way to give anybody anything other than the minimum anyway. And then you can't, physically cannot go over the second apron, and signing Kuminga to that big of a deal puts you dangerously close to not being able to figure out the rest of your roster monetarily.
Exactly. So that's why when you look at these sign and trades, and you mentioned, you know, Grayson Allen before as a possibility, I would absolutely do that in a heartbeat. Grayson Allen, two more years under contract and a player option. He's the kind of 3-and-D player that you wish Jonathan Kuminga was. Kuminga's not 3-and-D. He doesn't shoot the three, and he doesn't play a ton of D. Kuminga has a lot more upside than Grayson Allen, but if you're talking about a two-year window, Grayson Allen comes in, and he fits what you need right now more than Kuminga. Kuminga's a better player. Kuminga will be a better player if he continues on this trajectory, but in the immediate right now, a 29-year-old Grayson Allen, who he's a willing defender, he's a feisty ball player, and he can shoot the three, he would be a better fit for this year's team than Kuminga.
And I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you. My point is the Warriors went into this offseason feeling like they were going to be able to get a whole lot more than that for Kuminga, and now I think they're coming to the realization that they might not be able to, and they might have to just swallow, okay, Grayson Allen, that's what we're getting for Jonathan Kuminga, our seventh overall
sure.
pick a handful of years ago.
You could have, like you mentioned it before, you were out there trying to shop him a couple years ago, and you could have gotten a far better player. And
Siakam or Ananobi, something
that's right.
like that.
And you had him in a prospective Kevin Durant trade last February, and that deal fell through. So I give him some credit for at least trying to manage the asset, but you got into the last offseason. You didn't do anything, and this feels a little bit like Brandon Ayuk with the Niners, where they mismanaged that contract negotiation to the point where it got to the end, and you ended up giving him more money than you could have 4 months earlier.
888-957-9570. Thank you guys for being patient. Let's get to some phone calls here. Austin is in Redwood City and wants to weigh in. Austin, what's up? You're on Willard and Dibs, but it's Dibs and Grandy with you. What do you got?
Hey, this is what I got. Hey. The Warriors need to, they need Kuminga. And what do the Warriors actually want for Kuminga? Because Kuminga, he wants to play. No more DMPs. Not even when Draymond Green or Butler or Curry's out the game. He wants to be that second option. The Warriors are doing this all over again, just like they did with Jordan Poole when Klay Thompson got injured and came back. And then now it ain't about Jordan Poole anymore. It's about Klay Thompson and whatnot, and Jordan Poole is the second best scorer on the team. Kuminga has been putting the work in on that defensive end. He is a better three-point shooter than Draymond Green and Butler. He's been putting that work in. He deserved that contract. We getting too old. Where is the Warriors going with this? The Clippers is the second old team, and they old players. We don't got no chance against they old players. And we trying to get Al Horford. No more DMP for Kuminga. You see what happened to Looney, DMPs. He got tired of the DMPs, and now he's gone. They losing out on this. They need to stop playing with this young man and let this young man play and give him what he wants because he deserves it.
I hear you, Austin. Now, and I think that's exactly what Kuminga is feeling. I think you laid out Kuminga's thoughts on this whole situation perfectly. That is a big reason why I feel the way I do today. I think Kuminga, unless the Warriors blow him away with an offer, which I think financially it makes it really difficult for them to do, and they shouldn't do it, unless they do that, which might not be good for them. In fact, I could guarantee you is not good for them financially. Kuminga will not accept an offer to play here. That's how I feel.
Well, then what's he going to do? What's he going to do, Grandy?
Play on the qualifying offer, if
okay.
that's what it comes to.
Well, there you go. So he will accept an offer from the Warriors, and it'll be 7.9.
He's going to play a game of chicken with the Warriors. The game of chicken is accept a low-ball offer that you're not comfortable accepting from the Suns or the Kings.
Well, I don't think the Suns is a low-ball offer, honestly.
Okay, accept that offer sure. that you previously have said no to. If it's even still on the table, or I'm playing on the $7.9 million qualifying offer, and I'll walk away for nothing a year from
now. All right.
Now.
Okay. I mean, we'll see you in camp in late September, early October. If that's the way that he wants to play it, and his agent, who came out this week and said, well, I mean, our camp would never turn down $30 million a year. Well, what are the Warriors offering now? They're probably not offering 29. Are the Warriors offering 20 a year? Is it 17 a year? What are the Warriors offering? We have no idea. I would imagine it's more than 7.9. So if you want to play chicken and, you know, you're going to dare us to accept one of these crap offers and we're not going to do it, we're not taking Sacramento's detritus and 2 second round picks. And if we get Grayson, you know, are they going to take Kuminga for $36 million a year? That's the only way that would work. If it's Royce O'Neal, that's probably going to be a no from the Warriors because you're going to pay Royce $10 million. He's not going to help you like Grayson Allen would. So if you get through this process and he doesn't want to sign for whatever you think is a fair offer, all right, play on the QO and we'll get burned. And if you look at the history of players who play under the qualifying offer, it's a mixed bag, but there's more Nerlens Noel than there is players who actually were able to parlay that into a nine-figure deal.
Ben Gordon is an example
That's
where it paid
one.
Off
ben
for
Gordon,
him.
Yep.
Nerlens Noel is the most recent one that backfired in his face big time. Back out to the phones. Jan in Mountain View is up next. Jan, what do you got for us?
Yes, good afternoon. I've been thinking about this going back to last year. Moody got an extension, I believe, of $30 million. I don't know how many years it was. But,
3 years, 39 million, 13 per year.
I believe they gave Kuminga similar options, and he wanted a max, and they said no, and he then decided to back out and play for himself, and now he's been, you know, all this stuff that went on last year where he played real good, then he got injured, we couldn't trade him during the trade deadline, and then the DNP started and everything, and now he doesn't have that clout like he had last year. If I remember what I heard on the radio back then, I mean, Moody and both Kuminga, and Kuminga refused it. He wanted a max offer. Can you clarify that for me, please?
Yeah, appreciate the call, Jan. The reporting on that is actually pretty sketchy. You have a lot of varying reports. My personal opinion is there was definitely nothing offered in the area of $30 million per year. I find that incredibly difficult to believe. In terms of a lesser deal that was closer to what Moody got, 3 years for $39 million, maybe something like that, or maybe something like $18 million a year was on the table, perhaps. But the way that I have felt about this for a while, Dibs, is the negotiations got off to such a rocky beginning that they never even really got started in the first place, so not much of an offer was even made.
Right, and if you look at his draft class, Cunningham, number one overall, max. Mobley went three overall, max. Scotty Barnes at four, max. Franz Wagner went one pick after him, he got the max. And all of those were in that offseason, last offseason, when he did not receive the offer that he felt that was going to be commensurate with who he was. The interesting one was Jalen Green, 3 years and 106, yep, which is 35.3 a year. And Houston loved him so much that they traded him before that contract even hit their books. So Houston did a little bit what the Warriors did with Jordan Poole, where it was a sign of an extension. And when the money starts to hit, you trade him before that. And the other deals, Moses Moody, Corey Kispert, 4 years and 54. These are all much, much smaller deals. And so if Kuminga thought of himself as more of a Cunningham, a Mobley, a Scotty Barnes, which he's not, but if he's thinking, I want what they've got, and the Warriors are thinking more like, yeah, Moses, 3-39. How about somewhere closer to that? It's a non-starter then, and that's why we're here today.
Yep, seems like it. We're brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good. More time for your calls. Will, I see you. Brett, I see you. We'll get to you when we come back. Plus, we do have to hear what Anthony Slater had to say about this yesterday. We'll play that for you shortly. I think the Warriors are getting to a spot where they feel mighty uncomfortable with this Jonathan Kuminga situation. We'll continue to break that down on Willard and Dibs. Dibs and Grandy with you. Back with more next on 95.7 The Game.